This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The CIA may not be as powerful and omniscient as you think it is. That's one of the conclusions Mark Perry reaches in his new book, Eclipse, which is about the decline of the CIA. Perry thinks the agency has been in decline since the beginning of the end of the Cold War. His book covers the year from the death of Director William Casey in 1987 to the swearing-in of Robert Gates in 1991. Perry is also the author of Four Stars, The Joint Chiefs of Staff, and The American Military. I asked Perry why he thinks the CIA is in decline.
Well, I think it's been in decline for a number of years for a number of reasons, the most prominent being that the target has disappeared. The Soviet Union is no longer the great empire that it was. It's no longer the threat that it was. 50% of the CIA's budget was given over to trying to understand the Soviet Union, trying to be able to predict its moves and counter its moves, and the target simply isn't there anymore. So 50% of all the employees at the CIA, 50% of their budget is now going for a purpose that no longer exists. That's the primary reason.
But there's other reasons, too, you have in mind.
There are other reasons. I think that the CIA long ago had its day. The rise of technological collection means, satellites, intercepts, that type of thing. Certainly dampened the need to have human intelligence sources, which used to be the CIA's stock and trade. Also, I think over the last decade or so, especially during the Reagan and Bush years, the CIA has become more and more politicized as an institution, has served the president more and more instead of the country, and so was always looking over its shoulder to find out or to try to be able to predict what the president wanted. So it's, as I say in the book, it's an agency in eclipse that has to reformulate and rethink its goals.
You focus in the book largely from Casey to Gates. Why have you focused on that period? You call that the most revolutionary transformation of American intelligence in U.S. history, that period.
Well, I think it is revolutionary primarily because, as I pointed out, the disappearance of the target. But also in that period, we had a very conservative administration. An administration that was thought to have used the CIA for its own ends. I remember when Bush became president, all the journalists were talking about, oh, this man is the CIA president. Well, I thought it would be important to focus on a man who'd been CIA director and president at the same time. It's unique in our history. It's the first time it's ever happened.
Yet you say that President Bush has relied less on the CIA than any other president.
It's kind of a paradox. Bush, we were all looking over our shoulders to see how Bush would use the CIA, and while we were always trying to measure the pulse of the CIA, Bush actually styled himself the ultimate CIA officer, a very good intelligence officer. This, though, he only had 9 months on the job at the CIA itself. As it turns out, Bush is the ultimate paradox simply because, as a CIA officer, he's the one president in our history that really hasn't listened to the CIA at all. He isn't the quintessential CIA insider, the secret link to our covert or dark side in this country. Not at all. In fact, when the CIA has come to him on a number of occasions with startling new information, he's ignored it.
But you say he relied more on personal diplomacy. He relied more on what his own aides were telling him.
Well, this is the stock and trade of the intelligence officer, or people who style themselves the intelligence officer. They always want to believe their own sources. When the CIA, I'll give you a good for instance, when the CIA came to George Bush in August of 1990 and said, Iraq is going to invade Kuwait, he told the director of Central Intelligence, I just don't believe that. My sources, he said, tell me that that's not going to happen. Well, the obvious question is, who are his sources? Well, his sources were Hosni Mubarak of Egypt, president of Egypt, and King Hussein of Jordan. So he acted as his own intelligence officer, and he missed the boat. He failed to listen to the CIA when it would have been a good idea for him to do so.
In terms of Bush's own tenure as the head of the CIA, you say if he hadn't become president, he would have been the most forgettable head of the CIA in CIA history.
Well, it's very true. I mean, he only served for 9 months. That's a perfect example of what at the agency is called an interim director. He didn't really have much of an impact. And even in areas where he did have an impact, in assessing the Soviet analysis, for instance, accounting of missiles and who was right and who was wrong, Bush always came down on the politically safe side of an issue. He waltzed through his CIA career. It was just for him, I think, another line on his resume.
There's an ongoing debate within the CIA that you write a lot about between the people who believe that the CIA should be an objective source of intelligence information and a more activist source of information. Would you outline that difference for us?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, we have to understand the CIA in a way that we haven't thought about it before. The CIA is in many ways a perfect mirror of our own society during the Cold War, from left-wing liberals to straighter-than-arrow moderates to very right-wing conservatives. There are those kinds of people and have been those kinds of people at the CIA for 40 years. Now, given that political understanding and the 40 years of history we've been through during the Cold War, it's easy to imagine that there also might be liberals and conservatives at the CIA, and in fact, there were. There was a group of analysts who believed that the Soviet Union in the 1970s was on its last legs and was losing its empire, and they predicted the deterioration of the Soviet empire. There were conservatives who just didn't believe that. Their experience taught them they said something else. So these two groups clashed for almost two decades inside the CIA until that fight finally became public in the confirmation of Robert Gates.
Where does Gates fit in?
Gates is a very conservative, straight arrow, intransigent, I think, cold warrior. While he's very politically astute, and he's followed all the right moves to make it as a director of Central Intelligence, he's always been of the mind that the Soviet Union was an empire bent on world domination, that it would take advantage of American weakness wherever it could. And he opposed the liberals inside the CIA and for two decades undermined them.
When the confirmation hearings for Gates were underway, he was accused of cooking information so that it conformed with what the Reagan administration wanted to hear or what the Bush administration wanted to hear. Is that related to the whole, you know, objective versus activist agenda that that you're talking about?
Yes, it is. I think that if you take a look very clearly at a lot of the national intelligence estimates that were made by the CIA in the 1980s, you will find that they're very, very conservative. The Soviet Union is involved in international terrorism. The Soviet Union is behind the assassination plot on the Pope. All of these conservative agendas, conservative national intelligence estimates, you will find the hand of Robert Gates, a man who knew that in order to please the Reagan administration and, in fact, the director of Central Intelligence, he had to, let us say, skew the documents, skew the national intelligence estimates to give a more hardline view of the Soviet Union, or so his detractors say. Gates falls back on the defense that he was just trying to make intelligence documents and intelligence estimates more precise, more well-written, and more reflective of the reality in the Cold War years. Clearly, during his confirmation hearings, many top analysts at the CIA, many operations officers, came down on the other side of Gates and said he had really been tampering with intelligence.
Have you uncovered any evidence that indicates that President Reagan or President Bush really wanted their intelligence information cooked to conform to their worldview?
I have not come across evidence of that. What I've come across is really, I think, much more fatal to how we look at the CIA. Reagan and Bush clearly didn't want to hear that the Soviet Union was changing and that there was a new wave of reform. But even if the CIA had said that, and they did say that, they would have been ignored in the White House. The fact of the matter is that the CIA and CIA estimates carried no great weight in government during the Reagan and Bush years. The CIA may have been relied on for other operations, but its analysis of world events was just simply ignored. The Reagan administration and the Bush administration have followed their own course on foreign policy, regardless of the facts.
So you think the CIA was relied on more for covert activist operations than for objective analysis?
Yes, I do. I think that we had a very activist director in William Casey. He had his own agenda. He was a very prominent figure in the Reagan administration. I think that the Reagan administration started to rely on the CIA to do things privately, what could not be done publicly.
Examples?
Well, I think supplying the Contras when it was clearly not in the spirit of the congressional law to supply the Contras was a prime example of that. I think that the Iran operation, which was really a White House operation, which was shifted to the CIA, was another example of that. These were policies that could not be followed publicly, that the Reagan administration chose to handle privately, and the CIA was there to handle them.
Were there specific incidents you learned about in the conflicts between Presidents Reagan and Bush and the CIA in dealing with the end of the Cold War? You know, if as you say, the CIA was predicting that this was very possible and the Bush and Reagan administrations were resisting it.
Well, I think the two examples that I mentioned are the clearest. But the overriding sense that you get from reading national intelligence estimates during this period is the feeling that the CIA is somehow tilting its belief about the Soviet Union's capacity to compete with the United States economically. The CIA continued to pour out these estimates that said that the Soviet Union wasn't on its last legs economically. There's one study that I recall reading that said that East Germany would catch up to West Germany economically in 1978, is the year they mentioned. You could have asked a cab driver in East Berlin whether that was true, and he would have told you it's absolutely ridiculous. But the CIA continued to push this position that somehow the Soviet Union was an economically viable entity. And as we learned in 1989, that was the furthest thing from the truth. So the biggest story of the Cold War, the things that we spent billions of dollars on, gave to the CIA, the hundreds of economic analysts and military intelligence officers that we hired to tell us the big story, whether the Soviet Union was going to attack us, how they were waging a war against us, how they were going to compete with us. That story, the CIA completely missed. And they didn't miss it by a little bit. They missed it by a mile.
I'm sorry, let me just stop because I'm a little confused. I thought you were saying that the CIA was kind of predicting the head of the Soviet Union and Bush and Reagan weren't listening.
Only one small group in the Soviet analysis division was predicting that, the people surrounding Mel Goodman. Mel Goodman, Jennifer Glaudemans, these people within the Soviet analytic division were the ones that were predicting that things were changing in the Soviet Union. They were pointing out the debates that were actually going on inside the Politburo for example, whether to invade Afghanistan. But their dissent was really muffled over the years, and that made all the difference.
So not only didn't the presidents listen to them, the CIA didn't listen either.
That's right. There was a tendency inside the Reagan administration to speak with one voice, and you always hear this from CIA officers. They say it's important for the CIA to speak with one voice. Well, that voice during the Cold War and during the Reagan years was the voice of the Cold War. And all dissent to the contrary was really muffled.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about the subject of your new book, Eclipse, The Last Days of the CIA. My guest is journalist Mark Perry. This is Fresh Air. Mark Perry is my guest, is the author of the new book, Eclipse, The Last Days of the CIA. In your book, you write that the left sees the CIA as a government within the government. The right sees the CIA as having been compromised. And you say the truth is really more disturbing. The truth is that the CIA has become a big bureaucracy.
Yes, it has. As you might expect, over 40 years, the CIA has lost its edge quite a bit. This is like any other government bureaucracy, and we have to understand it that way. We're used to John Le Carré novels and Ian Fleming novels, but this is a bureaucracy. It's filled with analysts and economists and political analysts, and covert operations is really a small part of the CIA, a significant part, but a small part of the CIA.
So what's the problem with the CIA having become a bureaucracy?
The problem is that, well, when I started this book, I began with the assumption that we needed an intelligence bureaucracy. I still believe that. But we don't need this one. I think that the CIA is too tied to the White House, too tied to the presidents. They're there, as they say, to follow the president's orders, to do his bidding. We need an intelligence arm of this government that is far more objective and willing to take chances than the CIA is right now. We need a streamlined bureaucracy, one that is fully accountable to the Congress, and that in itself will not threaten the so-called sources and methods that the CIA is always touting. This is not the intelligence agency that we need at all, and it's not doing the job for us.
Are you skeptical that it will be reformed under Robert Gates?
Yes, I am. I don't think that there's any chance that the CIA can be reformed under Robert Gates. Frankly, Robert Gates' nomination was widely opposed, deeply opposed in some offices of the CIA. He's not trusted by some people, especially in the Operations Directorate. And in order to affect the kind of reforms that the CIA needs and that we need as a country, Robert Gates is not the man to be there. Whoever becomes the next president certainly has to take note of that and has to act accordingly. There's a big reorganization plan on the Hill. It is going to be enacted in some form over the next 2 years. The president is going to have to decide what kind of an intelligence agency this country needs.
Is the CIA moving toward economic intelligence, counterterrorism, narcotics, the areas that you hear mentioned in a post-Cold War CIA?
They are, but slowly, and more work needs to be done, especially in narcotics and economics. Now, I heard Robert Gates several months ago saying the CIA is not going to collect economic intelligence. I can't think of anything more foolish. We need a very good organization, institute, to study how our competitors in the world markets are competing with us, what new technologies they're getting, how we can compete against them. Economic intelligence is always thought of as hooliganism or a delinquency of some kind where you throw a wrench in somebody else's machine. This is information gathering. It's important that we find out how many bushels of rice Japan is planning to export over the next year. It's very important for us. And this kind of work isn't being done by the CIA. It should be done by the CIA.
Did you get access to any classified materials that made you see a story in a different way than you had before?
Yes, when I began to write Eclipse, I was able to obtain classified documents from an executive department source on some of the key operations that CIA was involved in around the world. Parts of these documents appear in the book. I think that what the document showed me is that the really big secrets that everyone worries about, the smoking gun that all investigative journalists worry about, is really not there. What government officials worry about more than anything is not that some of their sources will be blown, but that they'll be embarrassed. And you see this again and again and again in the documents, which are highly classified, discussions between government officials on how to handle testimony, descriptions of senators and congressmen they don't like. These things are embarrassing, and they don't want them publicized, and so they're classified top secret. I was amazed at the amount of information I was able to gather, and I was also amazed at how sensitive the government is to these kinds of leaks.
Your book Eclipse is subtitled The Last Days of the CIA. Now, how literally do you mean that? Do you think that the CIA is not only in decline, but it's going to end soon?
I think if I were a historian 100 years from now and looking back, doing a study of the CIA, I would pinpoint the rise of Gorbachev as being the point where the CIA started to fall apart. I mean it really, not literally, but figuratively. The CIA may go on and on and on and on for the next 40 years, for all I know. But the worst thing that can happen to a government bureaucracy in Washington is happening to the CIA, and that is that it's being ignored.
Let me ask you, so many Americans have this point of view that the CIA is so powerful and so influential and so often leading the charge in covert foreign policy. And now you're saying, well, the real truth is that the CIA is being ignored. It's really hard to reconcile these two incredibly and wildly different points of view.
Yes. Well, that's the point of the book. That's the real point of the book. I really believe that we have been the subjects of a great deal of mythology about the CIA. Now we have the CIA involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The fact of the matter is that the CIA, like every other government bureaucracy, has its successes and failures, its good professionals and bad professionals. I think that they're vastly overrated, vastly overrated. There are actually journalists in Washington who run around worrying that the CIA is tapping their phones. The CIA is just, they're not interested in that. They're just not interested in that. And I think we've really blown out of proportion the effectiveness of this agency. We've become believers in their own mythology. They'd like us to believe that they're really effective. They'd love us to believe that they're in every alley in every third world country in the world. I wish they were. They might do a better job, but the fact of the matter is that they're not.
Are you surprised to hear yourself saying this?
Yeah, very surprised. I'm very surprised. I thought that this was a much more romantic agency than it turned out to be. That it was involved in super secrets that no one could ever talk about. Fact of the matter is that sooner or later everyone hears about a covert operation. You can't keep a secret too long at the CIA, and journalists find out about them all the time, or they're leaked. And I think it's time that we shuck the mythology of the CIA, that we look at it with very, very clear eyes. The Cold War is over. The target is gone. We have a big job ahead of us. We have to have an intelligence organization that can do that job.
Mark Perry is the author of Eclipse, The Last Days of the CIA. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.